Hello and welcome to ABW Radio Live. I'm your host, John. No, Chris, he is coming back. Don't worry. He's still the main host and he will be here, but he's very busy at the moment. We're here today to talk about Arsenal's first loss of the season, hopefully only loss of the season, away to the old enemy Stoke. Today, I'm joined by Carl, first of all. How are you, Carl? How are you doing, mate?
If I don't smile, I'll cry. So let's leave it there.
Yeah, no, that's fair enough. Nice to speak to you again. We obviously all had the summer off and stuff, and we're all just starting to catch up again now as everything gets rolling. And Josh as well, nice to have you on today. How you doing, Josh?
Well, that game certainly happened, didn't it? I'm going to try and keep it positive because Chris isn't here, and Carl is obviously going to be the opposite. So I'll try and be happy.
Yeah, fair enough. I said the same thing start of the season. You know, some things at the club didn't go the way I wanted them to, but it was like, fresh start, hopefully, you know, keep it all positive. Even after the Leicester game, disappointed with defending, but we got the points and that's all I wanted. Got the win, but yeah, didn't go well today. We do the usual then. We'll start off with the team selection. The only two changes in was Holding came out and Mustafi came in, who obviously had been sort of had a longer recovery period from playing in the Confeds Cup. And was that the only change? Oh, and the midfield, Ramsey came in for El Nene. Carl, were you happy with the changes, pleased, sort of nonplussed?
I thought changes were necessary changes and they're the changes that were required. I thought brilliant changes. You know, we brought in a proper centre-back because yet again, we were playing square pegs in round holes. So we brought in Mustafi, who is an out-and-out centre-back, which is what we needed. And we brought in Aaron Ramsey, which I still think that Ramsey and Xhaka are our best midfield combination. You know, they are going to be the ones that we start going forward if we don't bring in anyone else. So for me, those are the changes that were necessary. And I thought they were good changes.
Yeah, I think everyone wanted to see at least one centre-back coming in. Per was on the bench today, obviously, and I think he was probably a consideration, but it was just maybe still a tiny bit of concern over the cut he had over his eye there. Josh, interesting one for me today. Lacazette stayed in the team. I don't think that was necessarily the wrong decision at all, but, you know, it's a way to Stoke. Yeah, they're not the Stoke of old, but they're still a very physical team. And it's going to be a different experience from Leicester, who were playing at home, and obviously it's a slightly easier atmosphere for him. Do you think that was the right choice today? Maybe Giroud could have come in instead of him and Lacazette come on against a tired Stoke defence?
I didn't see any problem with Lacazette starting, to be honest. You know, we knew Stoke were going to line up with a pretty hefty big defence as well, and it only took him 90 seconds or so to score against them, so I don't think he did anything wrong in that Leicester game. So bringing him in against Stoke, I think you can't really, you know, drop a guy like that for a game to Stoke. It kind of, you know, makes the Stoke players feel, you know, gives them a bit of a buzz because they're dropping their striker because we don't think he can cope with us. So overall, I think I didn't really have any problems with the starting lineup. I think as we progressed through the game, there were problems that occurred, but otherwise, I thought it was a decent start lineup.
Yeah, the Giroud one just occurred to me because obviously his physical presence and his good helping defensively. But I thought Lacazette did fine in the game. He didn't get a lot of the ball, but when he did have it, I thought he was quite effective with it. The one interesting thing for me is, you know, Mustafi comes back in. You obviously do still have the ability of using Rob Holding. You've got Mertesacker on the bench who, if he's on the bench, then, okay, maybe he's not quite fit enough to start, but he should be really if he's there. Is the two wing-backs, you've got Hector Bellerin playing at left wing-back out of position. I still think he did okay there. I don't think he did a bad job. And you've got Oxlade Chamberlain on the other side who has really split the fans so far this season. I've seen some people saying he's been playing really well. He did great last season, which I think, to be fair to him, towards the back end of last season, he was playing very well out of position. But today, I thought some of his crossing and his decision-making was quite poor. Again, very deadly when he's got the ball and he's running at people, when he makes that space and really pushes, you know, turns the team around. That's great. But maybe there's an argument for you could have left Holding in, So you've got two centre-backs in the back three. You can just put Bellerin on the right and move Kolasinac or Monreal, whichever one of the two in the left-backs. You're not doing, like Carl said, putting, you know, square pegs in round holes there. Is that something maybe you would have looked at, Josh?
Yeah, I think when it came to that point in the game where we had to shift things around, the changes that occurred, I think the right players came on, but not necessarily the correct players came off. I know the chat is firing up on Danny Welbeck and the number of opportunities that he failed to put away within that game. I think we saw exactly the same in the Leicester game, didn't we? That, you know, he'd get hundreds of chances, but he'd put away maybe one. We've always seemed to have a striker like that. I remember Adebayor would, you know, have 10 chances and put two away. And it's the same for Danny, really. And I think with Lacazette coming off, instead of him, I think was just down to the positions that Danny was taking up were the correct positions, whereas Lacazette, whether because it was getting so crowded in that penalty area, didn't have the space to get into the positions he wanted to or not. It was Danny Welbeck that was the man that was always there, so in theory was always in more of a chance of getting a goal.
Yeah, we'll come on to Welbeck and actually the sort of getting into the game itself. You know, we started, I think, as everyone expected, dominating the ball. I think overall throughout the whole match, we had like 70%+ possession. Might have even been higher by the end. But nothing really happened for the first 10, 15 minutes. Sort of typical Arsenal way performance, feeling each other out, both teams. And the first real good chance of the game actually fell to Welbeck. Carl, it's coming down the left-hand side. I think it was the Ox put a really good ball in. He found himself in the middle, chipped it over to Welbeck, and he's just opened up his body and he's got two options to either go for goal, which, you know, he wants to be a striker, so you expect him to, or to square it. And I think there was Ramsey and maybe Ozil, or it might have been Lacazette inside of him, you know, just sort of 20 minutes in. He took the shot on, but it was straight at Butland, who I know we don't like praising the other team, in particular if it's Stoke, but I don't mind Jack Butland. I think he's a very good player. He did have a good game, but I think we made it a little bit easy for him. Welbeck today, some of his decision-making, some of his shooting, some of his, you know, non-shooting. You know, I like what he gives. I like his effort. You know, he's always committed. He always runs. He always tries very, very hard. So he's going to be a favourite in that sense with the fans. But his end product just isn't quite there. It's not good enough, is it? And does it... It kind of highlights what we're missing without Sanchez in the team or another option in one of those wide positions. Because, you know, some people will say Walcott should come in, but everyone's got their problems with him and his finishing as well.
It's what do you do with a problem like Welbeck? You know, is he good enough to lead the line? No, he's not. Is he good enough to play behind the strikers? Well, is his passing that good to slip in balls and things like that? Well, no, it's not. Is he a winger? Well, Arsenal don't play with wingers. Should he play wing back? Is he good enough defensive? So it really is what do you do with a problem like Welbeck? My personal opinion is, and this ain't reactionary, and I'm telling you this now, it's not. I don't think he should start. I think we should have Welbeck in the squad because he's a different option. So if you want to change up the formation, it's someone you can bring on and to change it up. But, you know, in the formation that we're playing right now, it's just like Theo Walcott. He doesn't fit into this formation because he's not good enough to lead the line by himself because he's not good enough at finishing. Is he good enough to play behind the striker? Well, yeah, like you said, John, he will run down the ball for days and he's running... game is good, but what else is there? There's no end product. There's nothing else to it. So
he's a great athlete, just he hasn't quite got the technical ability as for the game we want to play.
So I don't think that he should be a starter. And probably when Sanchez comes back, if he comes back, he probably won't be a starter. But you know, time will tell. But for me, something is not right with his game because, like we said, he cannot finish. You know, his passing, his decision making is not good enough to play behind the striker, you know, in the quote unquote number 10 position because he just doesn't think with the ball. You know, the times where you should pass it early or hold on to the ball, he doesn't do it. But yeah, he will run for days. So it's a problem that Arsene Wenger needs to think about because going forward in the season, you know, is he going to be a starter? Is he going to continue to play in this formation with Danny Welbeck in the squad? If he does, then he has a problem with Danny Welbeck or a problem with the personnel. And yet again, it comes to what we said before, square pegs and round holes.
Yeah. I mean, I think everyone agrees, you know, if Sanchez was available, as he's apparently still coming back from an injury. I think they said he's back for the Liverpool game, which is next week, if I'm if I remember him right. Then he'll be back for that, and he will obviously be the starter, and it would be, I think, Alexis and Ozil either side or just behind, you know, Lacazette, which is what everyone really wants to see. As we say, if Alexis stays, but I'm sure that'll come up later on. I think just before that, Josh, actually, we did miss, I can't remember exactly when it was the penalty shout, or the big one, on Hector Bellerin. And it was it Diouf, I think, who brought him down?
Yeah, it was.
Now, there's some people who are Arsenal fans, and in ABW and, you know, all over the place, not just Arsenal fans, fans of every club, who are convinced every referee is against them, and you never get a decision, and it's all a big conspiracy. I'm not one of those people, so I try not to go in too hard on the referees. I did think Andre Mariner had a poor game today, but I thought, to be fair, he was pretty poor for Stoke as well. He let a couple of Arsenal tackles go without a booking. One Mustafi threw in later on, which I kind of cheered and thought, oh, he's probably going to get at least a yellow for that, but he didn't even get a free kick. So not going to complain too much. Do you have some sympathy for the referee not seeing the penalty from the angle he's at? On the coverage here in the UK on BT, they had Graham Pohl, and they showed it from the referee's angle, and you can't really see it. In real time, I called penalty because you're going to, and you know, that's the reaction. But from his angle, maybe it looks like he's stumbling a little.
Yeah, I think in real time, I also said, well, that's got to be a penalty. Not that anyone heard while I was on my own in my room. But so I didn't really was able to influence the referee. But yeah, when you look at it, and there's so much, you know, diving that goes on. And I think what Graham Pohl says, even though as a referee, he wasn't always the most observant, would be that, you know, it's very difficult to tell. But the fact you can say after you look at it, you know, the first replay you see, you're like, oh, actually, that's not a penalty. Then the third time you see it, you're like, actually, that probably is. It's one of those that I thought, it's probably an indictment of the Premier League, that when I first saw it, I saw a penalty, then I could see the reasons why it wasn't given. And, you know, the fact that Bellerin isn't necessarily in control of the ball after the players come through him. And, this, you know, just the fact that the Premier League can be very bad with its refereeing, especially with penalty decisions. I don't think that was the biggest decision that went against us for the whole game. I still think the offside call was, the offside call was very, very tight. And I don't believe the linesman actually saw it. And it was more luck than judgment that gave that.
We'll come on to that, because that's one I've had arguments with people about already as well since the game's finished. Straight away from the really good Welbeck chance, where, you know, he goes for goal, Butler makes a decent save, but you would expect him to. Stoke goes straight down the other end, and we see Hesse, the Real Madrid superstar, where it just hasn't quite worked out for him wherever he's gone, even at the feeder league. Don't just say it quietly, because Chris will go. Didn't really work out for him at PSG either. He's come to Stoke. He's only been there about 2 days. Makes a brilliant run. Some very nice Arsenal defending. Lets him get through. And thankfully, he squares it to Choupo-Moting, who's even less fit than Hesse is, apparently, because he just... it was basically a back pass to Petr Cech. But you saw what Stoke were going to do straight away, and it was pretty obvious. They're going to sit deep and try and hit on the counter with the new players and see if that works. I've got down here, Berahino comes on for Shakira. I think that's supposed to say Shakiri, but yeah. That happened afterwards. The first half kind of, we had a lot of the ball, moved it about nicely, but final ball delivery wasn't quite there. Again, like we said, Lacazette was decent, but he was trying to get involved. I think more in the second half, he was dropping deeper, but he was holding his position well first half, but there wasn't quite enough play into him. I thought Ramsey had a fairly good game first half in particular. He was making those late runs into the box. But I actually thought Stoke had the better chances. Shawcross had a free header. There was and there was another one for the other guy whose name I don't know any of the Stoke players, basically. But they had a couple of half decent chances, mostly from set pieces. We were giving away from stupid tackles and stuff. Midfield is something that got spoke about loads last season, Carl. In this game, in the first half in particular, and obviously very early in the second half, our midfield was not there at all when we were defending. It was pushed up high. You're playing with three at the back. You've got to protect your back three. It's also a back three that's only got one real centre-back in it. Again, just they were walking through quite easily, weren't they, in the first half? It was amazing how many chances they actually had, considering how little they had the ball.
They just ran through us, and it was so frustrating. What I find it most frustrating is that, John, you can see it. I can see it. Josh can see it. Why is it that Arsene Wenger can't see it, and you just want to tell him to tell the midfield just to come back a little bit, and you're wondering why he doesn't do it? Obviously, Arsene Wenger has a game plan, and he believes that his game plan is going to work no matter what. And I understand that. You know, he's an experienced manager, but sometimes you have to understand that your game doesn't always work. He doesn't really... I know people say that, I know Chris, I can imagine him saying this now, people saying that Arsene Wenger doesn't do tactics, but sometimes you have to wonder, does he? If you go to a place like Stoke, sometimes you've got to think to yourself, okay, we know what to expect from them, maybe I should tweak my team a little bit. But sometimes he doesn't do that. He just thinks that, right, my game plan is the best, and what we should beat the team with my game plan. And to an extent, it's worked for him over a number of years. It has. So give credit where credit's due, but sometimes you just got to tweak it. And I don't think he did that today. Like, hindsight is a wonderful thing, and we can all sit here and say, oh yeah, Giroud should have started, blah, 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 blah. You know, and like I said, you know, that Josh said, why should we sort of pander to Stoke's will and say, oh, well, your star striker is not going to play because we are a dominant team. So I can understand that. But at the same time, you know, sometimes you've got to think to yourself, why isn't he just changing the team just a little bit? And our midfield, even last year, just got ran through. Teams are just coming and just marauding through our midfield, and nothing's changed from last season. And like you, John, I tried to be positive. I thought to myself, come on, Carl, like, new season, start afresh, draw a line of the last season. Yes, last season we were shit and it didn't work for us last season, but this season, let's try and be positive. Against Leicester, and I went to that game, it was the same old thing. You know, you play against Leicester, you know what they're going to do, hit you on the counter-attack, because that's what they do. That's how they won their title. They hit teams on the counter-attack. So what did Arsenal do? We play a high line against Jamie Vardy. What do you think was going to happen? So, and it's the same in the in the Stoke game. We just don't. We need. We'll probably talk about transfers later, but we just need a strong beast of a midfielder who's just not going to take any bullshit. And unfortunately, we don't have that in midfield. I know Xhaka's absolutely brilliant passer. You know, he can pop the ball about, and Ramsey, he will run for days because that's what Ramsey does. But we don't have, you know, somebody just going to sit back and just sort of mop up everything that needs to be mopped up. You know, a quote-unquote Kante sort of player. And then people start quoting Coquelin at me. I swear to God, I'll throw something at him because he's not good enough. But do you know what I mean? And I just think that our midfield is not complete yet. We need something in our midfield. And none of this small, slight midfielders who can pop the ball about, run. We need a strong beast of a midfielder. And obviously, we'll talk about transfers later.
Yeah. Josh, just sort of to round out the first half, because it was, you know, Welbeck's chance was sort of the best thing for us. And then it was a couple of, you know, sort of half chances for Stoke. A few semi-decent ones you thought they could have done better with, but luckily for us, they didn't. Again, we've gone back to, me and Carl obviously just talked about the midfield there. I think it was on Arseblog this week. He was talking to Philippe Auclair, and they were saying that since we've gone to the back three, obviously it's been less games and... you know, you measure it over that, but statistically we concede more goals, or have been conceding more goals, and it's like 1.7 something, whatever, per game, as to, I don't know, 1.5. I can't remember the exact figures, but it's higher since we've gone to a back three. We know that Arsene Wenger famously isn't too interested in statistics, but he will obviously, someone would have shown that to him. So it's got to be something he's looking at addressing, and we're seeing a lot in games. Saw it last season, we saw it today, although it was slightly different because we were chasing the game. But when things aren't going our way, we do switch to a back four to change it up. Whether we're chasing a game or, you know, whether it's 0-0 when we're just trying to get the goal. Do you think it's something that maybe we will pull away from the back three eventually at some point this season? Because despite the winning run we went on towards the end of the campaign last season, I think that a lot of that was just momentum, and yeah, you had a fresh change, but really, I'm not sure the players are quite there yet to do the system, or at least their understanding of it anyway.
Yeah, I think we will eventually move back to like a 4-3-3 formation. But like we saw with Chelsea when we beat them last season, you need to have a run of poor form before you can do that switch. While we're still performing well, like we've only played two games of the season, it's not enough to generate a result of how a form really. When you look at a team's form, you always look at the last five games, you never look at the last two. You need a decent body of work to go off. So until that becomes a properly negative issue, then I can't see us changing properly. So I think we should just leave it at the moment. Keep going through it. It depends on what personnel we bring in as well. If we're going to bring any, I think we still need a centre back to replace Koscielny. And I think we also need a central midfielder, but not the kind that Carl's talking about. I don't believe a destructive midfielder is what we need at the moment. What we need at the moment is another box-to-box to cover Ramsey. I don't think Elneny is that person, especially if we're going to move to three in the midfield and we put someone like Ozu out wide, Lacazette and Sanchez, you know, sitting in that front three, and then we have Rambo, Xhaka and another. You know, that player can be Coquelin for the 10 or so games where we need to be defensive, and a new signing that drops in.
I'm not going to say his name, but someone who is not a big fan of the Cock was even asking for him, saying that he could have played today. So you know, he has got some votes of confidence occasionally. For anyone who's listening back to this, because some people don't watch this live and they listen to it through the pod downloads. 73295 has just put a brilliant comment I've got to give to anyone who's not watching live or reading the chat box. If Welbeck was in porn, he'd need a sub to do the money shot. He can't fucking finish. See, best thing about losing, you always get good jokes. So we get to half time. I was disappointed. Obviously, we haven't got a goal or anything, and we didn't create too much. Stoke had a couple of chances, but you expect that kind of thing when you go to Stoke. It's going to happen. Most of them, as I say, were crosses or set pieces. But I still felt fairly comfortable in the game. Thought, yeah, well, eventually we'll just grind them down, because Diouf is playing as a wing back, which was bizarre, because I'm sure I remember when he first saw him in the Premier League, he was like a striker. And that is the same Diouf who was at Man United, isn't it, Josh? I think, is that the same guy who's now ended up at Stoke?
Yeah, sorry, I dropped out for a second.
No,
that.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
You talking about Fletcher?
No, Diouf.
Oh, yes, well. The one came through the youth academy, but went out to Germany first.
That was it. Yeah. So, you know, he was having a real problems down their right hand side. I thought the referee was quite generous with some of his decisions. Shawcross was stepping out from their back three, back five into midfield. So I thought we could swamp him and nick the ball off easy, which we did quite a few times in midfield in the first half. So I was still fairly confident. Second half kicks off, a minute in, even that, and they score. Carl, do you want to talk us through the Hesse's wonder goal, the completely out of form, probably slightly overweight, half fit Hesse?
Xhaka gives the ball away, and okay, it's not the best thing, but there's still a hell of a lot to do after he gives the ball away, enough time for us to recover. But yet again, he tries to run after the ball and leaves our midfield totally exposed. Mustafi is... this is one of my pet peeves about defending, and I never understood that. If a player's running towards you, why do defenders constantly run back? Stand your ground. What are you going to do? Run into you? You're a defender, and you allow them into the box, and that pisses me off so much. Like, you're running with a striker or an attacking player, and you keep running. Stand your ground. Why do you constantly run with them and allow them into the box? I'm sure it gets taught to you from when you're flipping in Sunday League. Don't let them into your box. But yet still, it's what Arsenal defenders do. We run with them. And then he slides the ball in and he shoots. And obviously you've got Monreal who tries to block it. But it's just, I don't know how he manages to get the shot on goal. Czech, am I going to be overly critical about him? Yeah, I think he could have done better, but I guess it's one of those things. At the same time, the defending was just shocking. Mustafi, who is a seasoned defender, should have known better. He should know not to allow him into our box. He should know that you can't let someone run that far. And Monreal, he's not a centre-back. Yet again, square peg, round holes. And people say, well, he did well there. No, he's not a centre-back. He's a left-back. At best, he's a wing-back. But yet again, like Josh said, we do need to buy a defender because clearly we're playing people out of position. You know, when it's good, it goes well. But when it's bad, it exposes them. It shows and it highlights the fact that we don't have the players in the right position. And it's frustrating. It really is. But at the same time, there was a catalogue of errors within the build-up to that goal. A catalogue of errors just in every aspect. You know, defending is what you should do. You don't let people into your box. Stop running with people. Stand your ground. If he runs into you, he runs into you. Why are people so scared to almost take a hit? I don't know why, but it's just really frustrating, that goal. And I just think there's so much things that we could have done to avoid it. I mean, yeah, people score goals against us, and that's fine. It's not fine, but it happens. But that goal was totally, totally unavoidable.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And that sort of, I don't know, what it was, probably 30 seconds of play or something from Xhaka, you know, overhitting the pass to Ozil, which he couldn't quite reach, and then closing his man down to Hesse scoring the goal, kind of summed up the bad spell of last season quite well. Because, you know, the game overall, we weren't fantastic. Obviously, we couldn't break down Stoke enough to score a goal. Well, debatable, maybe we did. But, you know, that goal in particular was really poor. Josh, do you put that mistake all on Xhaka, or is it Xhaka's missed pass, there's all not tracking, Monreal, just kind of collective team collection of errors there?
Yeah, I think with most of the goals we concede, it's very rarely down to an individual error. We did see a number of errors in that goal. The only thing that I thought surprised me about it was with Mustafi. You know, we saw from Hesse for the whole of the game, he was dominantly playing on his right foot. So if he's not going to go to ground in the box, which, to be fair, we'd go absolutely nuclear on him if he went to ground there, that showing him onto his weak foot is the best option there. And then it goes down to the goalkeeper getting beaten at his far post, which at least it's not Czech's near post. I think that's the only positive I can find out of it. At least he's learnt that. But otherwise, yeah, it was just a terrible goal to concede. But to be honest, with the number of opportunities we created in the first half, I thought we had enough in it to at least get a goal, probably two, to still win it. I was still positive, even after the goal had gone in.
Yeah, it's, I mean, just for me on the goal itself, I got, you know, Xhaka's pass, okay, you're going to miss hit a pass every now and again, but the miss hit pass goes into Stoke's half, you know, it's in the middle third, if you like. He doesn't need to chase down and pressure the ball there. He could stay in position. He knows Ramsey's going to be ahead of him most of the time, which he is, because he makes those runs into the box. That's what he's good at. You know, Ozil looks like, oh, okay, he's going to feel and take Xhaka's position, but then doesn't really bother tracking back and kind of gives up. Mustafi doesn't know which way to go, and Monreal just, like, no effort at all. Like, the attempts to make any tackles in that was poor. And I think, like Carl said, I'm not going to stick too much blame on Czech. I think he could have done better, but I thought, actually, he had a decent game. There was a moment at the end of the first half where there were some balls really whipped into the box, and really decent ones, in that really awkward position for keepers, and he came out, punched a couple, a few he came out and caught, and, you know, he knew he was going to get smashed, but he still came out and took them and dominated, which is what you need to do against Stoke. So I thought, other than, you know, unfortunately the goal, which is always the case with goalkeepers, I thought Czech actually had a very solid game. So we go 1-0 down, everyone's heads drop. Obviously, you think, oh no, typical, you know what Stoke are going to do, and they did exactly that. All 11 men inside their own half, you know, all behind the ball, very tight, very compact. So, you know, it's going to be difficult. I think people were calling for subs earlier than what was made, because you know, in this situation, you know, you're going to have to start putting the ball in the box. There's going to be a lot of players in there. I think Giroud could have come on earlier, to be honest. They were warmed up straight away, but, you know, that's Arsene. That's the way he does things. We get our first clear chance again. Unfortunately, it falls to Welbeck, who's just having one of those games. Instead of heading the ball, it comes off his shoulder and just straight over. You know, again, we've spoke about Welbeck and just his timing on things and the weird ghost assists he's got, like, already won this season, where he, the complete mishit, but he's just brushed it and Lacazette scored and things like that. Yeah, you know, I was expecting him to get one of them today, but just not working. Stoke made a couple of changes, again, finally we get some movement from Arsene. Giroud comes on, Kolasinac comes off. Now, I had a question about this, because this is when we switch to the back four. Makes sense. Giroud and Lacazette playing together. Lacazette can play off either side or just two up front. They work quite well together. We've seen Giroud in the French national team. He played up front with Griezmann sometimes, just sort of behind him. So he has that understanding, and I think they do that quite well together already. But why would you take off Kolasinac? I know we've got a lot of the ball, we're dominating. But if you're going to start putting balls in a box, you're going to start getting set pieces. If you have to defend anything, surely Kolasinac is a better player to leave on than Nacho Monreal, who's made a mistake for the goal already, but there's a clear difference in physicality between the two. I just wondered if you have any thoughts on that, Cole, like, because we were talking about it and we couldn't quite get our heads around it.
Yeah, I didn't get that substitution either. I truly didn't, especially Welbeck wasn't having the best game either. So you're thinking to yourself, let's try and go a little bit top heavy. And then in the Leicester game, I'm sure he done the same thing, took off Welbeck and put on Giroud, and that worked well. Why he took off the left back, I forgot his name now.
Kolasinac.
That's the one. I have no idea. I just don't know. Like I keep saying, sometimes you have to understand, like, Wenger has years and years of experience, so he knows what he's doing. But it doesn't mean that he can't be questioned. And this is one of his more questionable decisions as to why he did that. I can't for the life of me sort of figure out why he did it. He has his reasons, but Welbeck just wasn't having a good game. And I don't know if he's one of the ones where you keep him on to try and boost his confidence. You know, sometimes if you know you're having a bad game and you don't get pulled off, sometimes that may boost your confidence and think, oh, okay, right, let me sort of, the manager's kept faith with me, let me try and reward his faith. But in this occasion, he didn't do it, and it just didn't seem the right substitution. It seemed a late substitution and the wrong substitution.
Yeah, we'll get on to the other subs in a minute, Josh. I'm going to come to you for the offside goal. You've got some quotes from Graham Pohl, because as soon as the goal was scored, I was a little bit behind and chatting to the boys in the WhatsApp group, and I've then heard, oh, that's never offside, they're all onside. And I thought, oh, hang on a minute, what's happened here? Catches up. Lacazette, brilliant, does his whole sort of out of his body and brilliant finish, hardly any backlift. Because just before he'd scored that goal, he had a good chance, and his first touch really wasn't there, and it was a bit of a surprise, because I thought up to that point he'd had a pretty tight game. When I saw the replay back, I was like, he's onside, Ramsey's onside. So I thought maybe there was a question of Ramsey's maybe offside and interfering with play, because they never clarify the rule properly on offsides anymore. And it seemed fine. And then they just didn't talk about it for about 10, 15 minutes on BT on the coverage. Then they showed the, you know, when they put the false line on the pitch, and there's about, I don't know, 2-3 inches of Lacazette's foot, maybe less than that, is just past the player. So it is technically the correct decision. So the goal should not have stood, so the right decision was called. But Graham Pohl said, what is his quote? The linesman must have guessed.
Yeah. Yeah, I think we've all seen it. At least I hope everybody here has seen it, and anyone listening at home has seen it. That it is a really, really tight call. I don't think there's any way a linesman can actually see and differentiate that from being offside. He's definitely had a guess at it. Perhaps his experience coming in from the linesman and saying, well, you know, 9 times out of 10, you know, it's not offside, or, you know, give that opportunity to him again. And he probably waves play on. It's just that it so happens that in that one time in this universe, he has given that as offside correctly. But I think normally it was, you know, we've seen those given. We've seen those given. We've had those go against us. We've seen offside goals go against
us. Whatever happened to the benefit of the doubt to the attacking player?
Yeah, no, I mean, that's what I thought. And if that was given against us, I'd be annoyed, obviously, because then they'd show the fine replay and whatever. But you'd have to say in real time, you're like, that looks like he's perfectly onside. He looks well onside. Like, it wasn't even, when you saw it on replay, and when they slowed it down, before they put the line down, it didn't even look close. So, I mean, I think Josh has called it right, and like Graham Pohl said as well, there's, the lino must have guessed it. I mean, I guess it's good if the referees get the correct decision, and the linesman. But yeah, that one was strange. Which then obviously got some people tooting the referees are all in on it, and no one's trying to help Arsenal. They're trying to stop us getting any points. Danny puts a lovely quote in here. Even Steve Austin, the bionic man, would not have got that with his eagle eye. If people aren't old enough, Steve Austin, he doesn't mean the wrestler. It's another guy, but that's for older people. it's weird that goal, because there's not a lot you can say about it other than they got the right decision, but they got it by luck. It's bizarre. So I don't know. I felt we were probably good enough for a goal today, and maybe that should have been it. But you never know. That gets ruled out. Obviously, Arsenal's getting very upset, very agitated. Mark Hughes is probably laughing internally. Last two subs, you know, almost the 80th minute, so bang on time. Walcott and Iwobi come on to save the day. Interesting. On for Lacazette and Xhaka. I can sort of see the Lacazette one, because maybe still getting used to the rest of the team and fitness and that kind of thing. Xhaka, I thought, was a little bit odd, because we basically had no midfield then. I think it was Aaron Ramsey was our midfield. Carl, would you have done anything different there with the last two subs?
Yes, I would have taken Welbeck off. I genuinely would have, because after a while, you have to understand that when someone's having a bad game, they're just having a bad game, and you just say to yourself, okay, I need to bring him off. Taking off Xhaka, I didn't get that one at all, because you want to someone who can create a goal. And yes, you can. So you got Ozil on the pitch, and yes, you have Ramsey on the pitch. But I still think that Xhaka has got that ability to pick out a pass from anywhere. He's also got the ability to shoot from range as well. So I found that one very, very weird. So I'm not too sure what Arsene was thinking, but, you know, he had his reasons. The Lacazette thing, I don't think I would have taken him off, because he is the main goal threat. You know, I would have kept him on definitely. I understand what you're saying, John, about, you know, he's getting used to the team, but I just think that he was most definitely the main goal threat with his pace as well. And yes, I understand that Stoke was just sitting back. But if you saw, I don't know if you remember in the Leicester game when, you know, he was in the box and his close control, where he beat about three players and just popped off a shot. It was brilliant. And that's what the kind of thing you do. Danny Welbeck would never do that. And I just don't understand the keeping Danny Welbeck on sort of decision for me. And ultimately it backfired. But, you know, like I said, hindsight's a wonderful thing. And you can't change the past, I guess, but at the same time, I just don't think that his substitutions today were questionable at best, I think.
Yeah. Josh, for you, was there anything you would have done different, either change the shape or I know obviously you've only got so many options off the bench?
Yes, I think the only thing I would have done is probably risked it. We discussed it, I think, pre-pod regarding that substitution of Lacazette coming off, and I would have taken off Welbeck. When you look at it, you can see the logic in taking off Lacazette. Welbeck's getting in all the right positions. He's just not finishing off the opportunities, whereas Lacazette, you know, he's struggling to get into the right positions. But when he does, like we saw with the offside goal, he's putting him away. So it is that, do you continue with the guy who's getting in the right positions but not finishing them, hoping that, like he did against Leicester, he's going to put one away eventually? Or do you, you know, risk it, keep Lacazette on, and hope if you take Welbeck off that Lacazette is going to start taking up those good positions? So I don't know what's going on, really. It would have been a risk. And I think keeping Welbeck on, although it sounds weird, was the safer choice
yeah.
between the two with the substitution at that point.
Yeah, no, I mean, I do kind of see that. I think taking Xhaka off was a little bit odd. I think when you've got that much possession and, you know, Stoke are so deep in, yes, you want your technical players who can dribble with the ball, you know, Iwobi who can wriggle in between spaces and all those kind of players. But when you've got that much possession, you just want someone sitting sort of just sort of 10 yards from the halfway line who can ping the ball from the left wing to the right wing as quickly and as accurately as you want. And I think Xhaka is our best player at doing that. So, yeah, no, I do agree with Gal. I would have taken Welbeck off myself and left Lacazette on because I think he does, despite only being at the club a little while, I think he has a good understanding with Giroud. And we saw there was a chance right near the end where Giroud got really, you know, battled against, I don't know, whether it was Shawcross and maybe Peters or someone else. Two of them in the air, one the header, one the knockdown, but there was no one on the end of it. Ramsey was making his run into the back post and there was no one sort of on the penalty spot. So I think that's the kind of spot you might have found Lacazette just hovering, waiting to get the knockdown for. But yeah, it wasn't to be. The only other thing I wanted to bring up in the game was, I think it was sort of 3-4 minutes from the end when, again, we just camped all around Stoke's box. And then I think it was a misplaced pass and Stoke broke down the other end. Oxlade-Chamberlain was getting essentially just pushed onto the floor. I can't remember who it was by. And then has the biggest strop I've ever seen Arsenal player have for a long time, just whinging at the referee because he doesn't blow for a foul. And then Mustafi completely clears out Eric Peters. Did you enjoy that tackle, Carl? I quite like that one. Mustafi didn't get booked somehow, stud showing and everything. But I thought it was quite
good. I did. If I'm really honest, had he got booked, well, I don't think we could have had court or complaint. Yeah. You know, let's be honest. I think if that had happened to an Arsenal player, we would have been up in arms, like, for fuck's sake, like, stud showing. But I did enjoy that tackle most definitely. It was satisfying.
Yeah.
But he should have done it earlier in the game. But no, that's, you know, an Arsenal player showing a bit of grit and determination. Most brilliant. And I loved sort of things like that.
Yeah. It's nice when you see him stick up for a teammate who's just been fouled. It would be nice if Oxlade-Chamberlain wasn't waving his arms in the air and sort of having a little hissy fit at the side of the pitch and kept up the play. Play to the whistle, as you're always told when you're about 6 years old or whatever. And I mean, yeah, that was the game, really. It just fizzled out and we couldn't get anything out of it. Josh, were you surprised by the result? Was it kind of a you could see it coming sort of thing, too early in the season to read into it anything?
Yeah, well, I didn't really see it coming. I know we've got a good recent record against Stoke. I know our home or away record to them still isn't great. I think we've only won 2 out of 10 in our last meetings with them away from home now. So it's not particularly great, although we do always seem to beat them at the Emirates. Overall, I didn't see the team performing that poorly. I still think if you go through it and look at the players, I don't think anyone had a particularly poor performance. I think it was the, you know, just that last bit of intricacy in the final third that really let us down, because I think when you look back at the first half, we should have been at least 3 or 4 up with the opportunities that we created. You know, it's just come to the point that we've bought a striker now, so we can't blame that for the reason why we didn't put our chances away. So I don't really know what really there is to say, other than the fact of, you know, we're going to get these kind of results early in the season. At the moment, I'm not even looking at the league table because it means nothing after 2 games.
Yeah.
Maybe let's look at it after 5, look at it after 7 games, when there's been an actual decent run from decent teams, because, you know, last week Huddersfield were top for a day. I don't think that's the way it's going to end. And there's also 3 teams at the bottom who have played 2, lost 2, that haven't scored a single goal. I'm sure they're going to, you know, pick up points near the through the duration of the season, and that will give us more of an idea of how this team's going to perform this year. I'm still positive for the season. I can't, you know, this Stoke result isn't going to derail our season. If it does, it would be absolutely crazy, and I cannot see it happening.
Where I get that it's not going to derail our season, sorry, negative Nelly coming up, but you're 2 games in and we're already playing catch-up. Don't you find that frustrating? And I get what you're going to say. Yes, it's only two games. And of course it is. And throughout the season, I mean, no one's going to go unbeaten in the season. I get that. I know it's not going to happen, no matter what Man United fans think, because I saw something on Twitter where they're saying that they could go unbeaten this season. Fuck off, mate. Like, but it's still frustrating that we're two games in and we're having to play catch-up with our rivals. And it is annoying. I mean, yeah, you've got Spuds playing Chelsea, so, you know, you're hoping for a 17-17 sort of draw, five players getting sent off. But if one of those teams win, then, Chelsea lost last year, so they're obviously playing catch-up with us. But if Tottenham win, then we're obviously to catch up with them. And it's just frustrating that I just think that at the beginning of this season should lay a marker. These are the games that people should be looking, oh, you know, everyone's sort of written us off already. All the commentators have said, oh, no, Arsenal not going to get top four this season, blah, blah, blah. Kind of at the moment, we're proving them right. Why aren't we laying markers down? And I'm sick of people saying, oh, yeah, but Stoke are a bogey team. Fuck that. Why are Stoke our bogey team? You know, these are teams that we should be beating. I'm not going out there to say that we should beat every single team in the league. And no, we shouldn't. But at the same time, you know, we've got to lay markers down at the beginning of the season so that when teams come to play us later on in the season, they can be like, oh, shit, you know, Arsenal are a good team. Not, oh, no, Stoke got at them. So if Stoke can beat them, we can beat them. You know, things like that. I remember during the Invincible season, they were saying that in the tunnel, we knew that we'd beaten teams already. They looked defeated. Mm. Now we've sort of lost the game. Teams are going to be thinking, no, we can get at Arsenal. You know, we can do a job at Arsenal. And then they can start playing harder. And that's what annoys me.
Yeah.
So is that the case that if we go and win our next five games, does that not turn the table again? Because we've got five fixtures that are winnable. We've got Liverpool that can't defend for Toffee.
We
lost to Watford. It doesn't matter, does it? Because we'll outscore them. we've then got Chelsea. We play them in September. Chelsea, who we've beaten. We've got Bournemouth. We've got West Brom. All winnable fixtures and not against so-called bogey teams. We then go and play Brighton. We've got Watford. We've got Everton. We've got Swansea. That's up until October. We can win all of those games. That puts a marker down that we only lose one game. They're all winnable throughout that run. And that puts a marker down.
I'm going to be oddly positive, which I know is very rare for me on the radio. I do agree with Josh that if today's game was at the Emirates, then I think you would have a very toxic atmosphere already with the fans. And the fact is, an away game, the away fans, you know, the ones that travel all over the country, they're amazing. The ones that travel all over Europe with the team and even like pre-season, all over the world and stuff, they're, you know, unbelievable. And they always do stick with the team. So the fact that we're playing Liverpool next, that is away as well, isn't it, the Liverpool game?
Yeah,
we play them at Anfield.
Yeah, so, you know, if we win that, it's against a big team. I know it's Liverpool and they're not the Liverpool of old, but it's still a really big game. If you win that, then that's such a huge boost for the team. And I think that gets everyone back on side of them and that positive kind of feeling. The only other thing I can, you know, like today was poor, obviously, and you don't want to, these are not games where you want to drop points. We've shown previously in the past that we generally can't compete in the league because it's against the sort of top six sides. You know, like ourselves included, that's where we drop our points. But we pick up all the points against the so-called smaller teams in the league. So you can't really afford to lose too many of these games. Every now and again in the season, you're going to lose one. It happens. Doesn't matter what team you are. It just happens. At the moment, you can give the team a little bit of a break because, you know, there's no Koscielny in the team because of his ban. Zaka obviously wasn't, I assume, fit enough then for today to at least start. So, you know, the defence might be slightly better. So maybe you could give the team a little bit of a break, and the window is still open. So there is still a chance that business gets done.
So I just want to say this again. It seems like I'm being so negative, but I'm not. You said for the next league games that we've got, yeah, Liverpool, we lost against them last season. Bournemouth, we drew against them 3-3. Chelsea, we lost against them. West Brom, we lost against them. Yes, winnable games, yeah? Yes, they all are winnable games. Last season, we probably said exactly the same thing. They're all winnable games. Did we win them? No, the fuck we didn't. So, yes, I know it sounds like I'm being negative and I'm so sorry. But what I'm just trying to prove something to you that, yes, they are all winnable games. They are. are we didn't do it last season, so what confidence have you got that it's going to be done this season?
Three out of the four times we played Chelsea last season, we beat them. That's it. That's me ending it. We beat them in the FA Cup, beat them in the Cup.
We lost against them away. Anyway, it's done. Yes. Okay.
Sorry, Carl. So,
we lost against them at their ground, and that's where we're going to play them.
Yeah. Okay, well, we're trying to keep it as positive as you can, because I know we got a few people complained about the last radio show saying it was negative despite the fact we won. I know Jace went on a bit of a rant. But it was needed. It had to be done. It was definitely needed. If you've got any questions, people in the chat box, please feel free to put them in there. Just put a little queue at the start, and then we'll try and answer as many as we can. If you haven't already, be sure to check out this week's podcast. Very special. Gimli managed to get FK on. In fact, he's managed to book him for the entire season. So FK is going to be on every single week, which is really, really impressive, because he's a very busy man. I don't know how Gimli's managed to do it. So be sure to check out this week's. And obviously, new schedule now. It's Monday night's recording. So late Monday evening, early Tuesday morning, they'll be available for you all to listen to. But yeah, we've got a couple of questions already. We've got one from, I was going to call him the porn man then, but that's really mean. It was just a quote about porn. Anyway, ignore that. 73295. Shall we give Ozil a well-deserved 3 months off now and give him £300,000 a week, or should we get real? Josh, do you want to take on Mr. Mesut today? Because I don't think he had his best day. And to be fair, in physical games, he doesn't always show up, does he?
I was going to say, is that because you need someone positive for this? Ozil played two key passes right at that end of the game. It's not his fault that he went to Danny fucking Welbeck to smash over. That's all I'm saying on Ozil. Ozil's only as good as the player that he's putting it to. And that is the problem with our team at the moment. If he plays those into Lacazette, he's got two assists. And we're all raving about him.
Yeah.
Overall, yeah, okay, he's not a big old bruiser. But, you know, you've got to take the rough with the smooth. Not every player can be like Darren Fletcher in the midfield. we've got to take something. We've got to have some kind of, guile to our play. And I thought Ozil did well. I don't think he slowed down our play. I think what we did was, we know Stoke are going to, you know, put the I'd say two banks of four, but they didn't play that. So they put like eight men behind the ball. And you need to be not slow, but you need to find the spaces. You need to draw them out, find the holes, and then play that ball. There's no point just lumping upfield and playing football like you're playing FIFA and just going all guns blazing all the time. It's not a sustainable way of playing football. So I think that Ozil does have great games for us. There's no denying that. But I think it is the case of Ozil only looks good when the players around him are playing well. And that's not necessarily a bad thing for that player. He's not necessarily having a bad game. And that's where I'd leave it.
Yeah, no, I get that. And Josh was also referencing, we had a question from Liam about Ozil, saying that to him, he isn't as good as our second best player in the team should be. I assume he means Alexis is our best player. I think most people tend to agree with that. He thinks, like Josh referenced there, that he slows things down a bit too much. Carl, do you think there's... You know, people are a bit split on Mesut, and if we do end up keeping him, he's obviously going to be on a very big contract. It's reported, like, maybe it's £300,000 a week. No one really knows. You know, no one will know until it's signed and announced. But do you think there are some games where Arsenal's got to be a bit braver and drop him and say, you know what, we can't afford to play you today. Let's just play 3-5-2 if we're going to stick with this three at the back. Have three real midfielders and just play two strikers up top, for example, something like that. Play a Giroud and a Lacazette together.
Yeah, I do think there are games that he's not suited to. Whether Arsene Wenger's brave enough to drop him, who knows? But yeah, there definitely are games that he's not suited to, but we just don't. He either plays until he's running to the ground. Around Christmas, obviously, he gets his injury, you know, 2 week break. And then we play him again. For some teams, he's just not suited to that. Today, I just don't think he was suited to a more physical team. On his day, Ozil was brilliant. You know, he's absolutely fantastic. And would I rather keep him than not keep him? I'd rather keep him, because he's one of them players that could open up a pass from anywhere. And I just think that on his day, he's absolutely brilliant. There are some times when he's not, but on the whole, he's very, very good. And, you know, you want to keep your best players, and Mesut Ozil is one of our best players. So I'd love to keep him. I don't think it's a bit telling, though, that this season, you know, he's in his last year of his contract, but I can't remember hearing about any club coming for him. Not one, there's not been any rumours about sort of a club in for him, but I can remember at least anyway, which I think is quite telling. So I don't know if a lot of teams have looked at him and thought, you know, he's got this laboured style around him, and people, some people think he's lazy, but, you know, the stats show that he covers and he runs so much. So clearly he's not lazy. But for me, like, to kind of the original question, I do think there are games that he shouldn't start for, and there are games that he should sort of sit out. And then if we are winning, then bring him on. And if so, we need a goal from somewhere, bring him on and just get him to start pinging balls all over the place, left, right and centre.
Yeah, there's quite a few. I mean, the Ozil talk has sparked a bit of a debate in the chat, and I won't go into everyone's question because there's a lot of people saying similar things. Some sticking up for him, and there's a few saying, when was Ozil's last, you know, great game? And people sort of referencing Ludogorets, which is there's a few comments of sort of Mickey Mouse Champions League club, and I do get it. And I think what you're talking about, Carl, with lack of teams, or seeming lack of teams interested in trying to sign him, I think one, it's the fact that he wouldn't take a wage cut probably if he left. You know, the Premier League pays such high wages now in comparison to every other league. And he knows that, you know, if he gets another contract at Arsenal, he'll get an increase because the money's just going to keep going up every single year in terms of TV deals and stuff. So, but I think it's teams have trended away from that style of number 10. They don't really have that kind of thing anymore. You look at Man City and they have Kevin De Bruyne, they have David Silva. They're number 10s in an Ozil sense, if you like, but they're a bit more combative. They're more involved. They appear, you see more of them on the pitch. You see them do more, not just with the ball, but off the ball as well. I do think Ozil gets a bit of a bad rap sometimes because I do think he does try, but I think he gets frustrated with the players around him. Like Josh says, you've come from Real Madrid where when you pass the ball, it was Ronaldo or Benzema, and it's like, yep, I'm doing my job. They're getting the goals. Great. You're passing to Danny Welbeck via Walcott. you're not going to get the same effect. So I think you've got to give him time. You've got to give Lacazette time. I think he's the type of player that Ozil will, you know, really relish playing with because he makes those great runs. I saw a couple of times today, like Mustafi trying to hit long balls just direct over the top, because Lacazette is just quick enough to do that. And I think Ozil will thrive with that striker in front of him. Is he worth 300 grand a week? I don't. Look, the money in football is ridiculous. I don't think any of the players are worth the value they are and the money they get paid. But if someone's willing to pay it, then that's their market value. It's just, that's how it works out.
I remember last season when we talked about money, I think Chris was on the show, and you said something. And ever since then, John, I've always stuck to it. It's not my money. I couldn't give a damn. It's not money.
I don't care about it either. The thing is, if paying Mesut Ozil 300, whatever grand a week it is, means that you can't sign player X, player Y, player Z, then it's like, yeah, okay, I'll have a conversation about it. But until that point, I don't care because it's not going to change. They're never going to change the ticket prices for me because I'm complaining about how much Mesut Ozil or Alexis Sanchez or whoever gets paid. But I do get people's frustration with him. And I was frustrated with him today because I think in these games he does tend to hide a bit and you need a bit more physicality. But we'll move on from Mesut, as he always gets a bit bullied. We've got one from Arian HQ. Do you think we will sign anyone? I'll let you both have a go on this. Josh, you go first.
Probably. Is that a good enough answer?
I mean, that's a pretty good answer.
I've got no idea. I would hope we do, because I think we need a centre-back to replace Koscielny. Otherwise, I'm just going to say it all year for every single game that he's injured for because of his Achilles tendonitis. And to be honest, I can't be bothered to have an agenda, so I'd rather we just deal with the problem.
Yeah.
And we need a central midfielder to deal with Aaron Ramsey because he can't do 70 games in the season either.
No.
So those are the two positions that we need to do. But we also need to get rid of quite a few players that are blocking those positions. Which I know the manager has mentioned in his post-match press conference. I'm
yeah,
sure
wanna,
he'll get a lot of
quote,
pelters for.
Do you want to quote that, what he said? Because it's very strange.
yeah, he said, basically, to paraphrase, that he wasn't really thinking of signing any more players at the moment because he's got 33 in his squad at the moment. And that's too many. So he needs to think about trying to get rid first before he can bring in. Which, to be fair, we know transfers speed up the closer you get to the deadline day. So perhaps we can push some out, but I'm not going to start naming names of who I think will stay and who I think will go. Because, to be honest, I've got no idea what the manager thinks. You know, we could be going into the season. Bellerin's gone to Barca and we've got Carl Jenkinson at right back. I've got no idea.
Don't say things like that, Jesus. I love Jenko, but no. Hector, please don't go. Carl, do you think we'll sign anyone else? Obviously, I thought, you know, the season, the transfer window started really well. We got Kolasinac, obviously, already in. We signed Lacazette. Finally got the striker everyone's been calling out for so long. So do you think we'll get one more done?
Like Josh, I would like to think so. I really would. But again, like Josh said, I think it genuinely is dependent on who leaves. I think if no one leaves, we don't get any money in. And probably rightly so, because, you know, 33 members of playing stuff in the squad, the wage bill needs to be thought about. So, you know, like Josh, I would definitely like a centre-back and I'd also like a centre-mid. I think those are the only two positions that we kind of need strengthening in. And as long as none of the starting sort of team leaves, you know, the fringe players, yeah, I guess you can look at getting rid of them. But as long as no one from our first team leaves, then that's it. But I truly do think it's dependent on who leaves, first of all. I think as long as we get people out, then we need to think about, like Josh said, a centre-back and also a centre-mid.
Yeah, for what it's worth, I agree. I do think centre-back is something we do need to look at. I think centre-mid is the more pressing problem for this current season anyway. I think the issue is if we don't get a centre-back now, when we get to next season in the summer, it might not just be one centre-back we need, it might be two, and they might be starting centre-back. So that's a lot of money in the market, which will obviously next year it will be, I don't know, fucking Kyle Walker will probably be a £200 million player or something stupid like that, twat. Anyway, Duke Nero. Is today's performance bad luck or an ill omen of more to come? I'll take that. I think it's just a bad performance. I'm hoping it's not an ill omen. I'll put it down now. It's an ill omen if we don't get another central midfielder in. If we haven't got one by the end of the transfer window, then it's the sort of thing I can see happening a little bit too often, because that midfield does have a weakness, and it's the players themselves should be able to rectify it on the pitch, but also it's partly down to the coaching, the fact that they're not being told to cover their back three enough and cover the defence, because the centre halves are just too easy to get at. So that would be my answer for that. GK, do you think this 3-4-3 system suits us and has some thinking behind it? Josh?
I assume it has got some thinking behind it, but it's not the formation I'd play. You know, what we've said across the show would be the fact that we're giving away more opportunities in this. It's not a more stable system. It does allow us to get the best out of Xhaka and Ozil, I think, in this system, because that's the problem we've had for a while, is trying to accommodate Ozil in a system that gives us a bit of stability, because of the fact that the number 10 position doesn't really exist anymore. And he is the last great number 10. So I would look for moving somewhere else, but I think for the moment we keep with the system. I'd probably change the personnel within it. I wouldn't have Oxlade-Chamberlain starting. I would have Kolasinac and Bellerin as the wing backs, and we bring Holding or Mertesacker or Chambers, or I could name quite a few centre backs we've still got. It's a shame Gabriel's gone, because there'd be another one, but that can all play at centre back. Keep Monreal at left centre back, because he played great there for that part of the season when we moved to that system. So I think overall we keep that, but I've got bigger problems with the fact that we're playing Oxlade-Chamberlain, because he just winds me up as a player. to be honest, at the moment. He just has flashes of brilliance just coupled in the same move with flashes of just being a complete and utter retard. And I think that's the bigger problem at the moment is, yeah, he runs around a lot and looks quite good, but ultimately he doesn't really deliver. And we've had enough of those players. And I think really we need to either sell him if he wants game time, which we can't give him, or he just deals with the fact that he's not going to start every game. We bring him into the centre for cover for Rambo.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. Sort of, it kind of ties in a little bit. Kevin NQ here said, why are we always starting the season with an incomplete team? Two left backs at centre half, including the middle centre half, right back at left wing back. What's going on? Someone in the chat earlier as well, but I can't, sorry, apologies, I can't remember who it was now, but five left footed players on the pitch, and we're playing a right footed player at left wing back. Carl, is that just a case of injuries, suspensions, and stuff at the moment? Transfers not complete, or, you know, could the manager have done things differently?
I think the injuries and suspension definitely do play a part, because if Koscielny's fit, he's playing today with Mustafi. So if Koscielny's fit, you're thinking of a back pairing of Koscielny, Mustafi, and probably Monreal. So the suspension for Koscielny definitely played a part. And again, definitely with Perma Asako as well, I think that played a massive part. So unfortunately, there are times in the season that this is going to happen. It just so happens that it's at the beginning of the season. You can't, as much as I want sort of Arsenal to sort of buy players, you can't just keep throwing money at it. We're not Man City. You can't just keep, we have the players there. And unfortunately, for the first two games, they wasn't available. Going into the Liverpool game, Koscielny's back. Per Mertesacker is going to be back. So you're thinking of our centre-backs, we're going to have our starting centre-back. So it's not all doom and gloom, no matter what I might think. So we have got the players to play centre-backs. The centre-mid, I totally agree with Josh. I think I don't want to run Ramsey into the ground. And unfortunately, I've got a feeling that he's going to do that. It's really, really annoying. But, you know, we'll see. I do think that we do need another centre-back to cover for Koscielny. But yeah, at the same time, just can't, don't think throwing money at it, as much as I want players in, throwing money at it is not always a solution.
Yeah, I get that. And I hope, Oscar Arias as well asked who's to blame for our poor defence. I think that kind of ties into it as well. So sort of answered that question there. We've got one here from Robert Fowler, not Robbie Fowler, as I almost called him. Sorry. That's a bit rude. Who was your man of the match today? I'm going to make a rule. You've got to pick an Arsenal player. Josh?
Oh, God. That took Jack Butland away from me. player of the day. I would probably go with... Well, it's got to be someone creative, isn't it, really? Because no one really finished anything off. We weren't that stable at the back. So I would go with Ozil. Because he was the most creative player on the pitch. Sounds Great. Ridiculous, but yeah, I'm going to get a lot of pouters for that. But that's the only way you're going to judge this game, really, is creativity rather than someone finishing any chances off.
Yeah, fair. Carl, for you, who's your best Arsenal player today?
Lacazette, because he scored a perfectly good goal but got ruled offside for no reason.
I love it. for me, I wanted to say Ramsey, but then I know the chat will go, oh, it's just because you fucking love Ramsey. I do fucking love Ramsey. He's great. He made so many brilliant runs today, and he was unlucky not to score. That was the other one in the first half. Butland made another really good save there. I'm going to give it to a defender, weirdly. Mustafi, who was partly at fault for the goal, but just because he went in really hard on Peters, I really enjoyed that. So it made me smile at the end, even though we were losing, and I knew we'd lost the game at that point. We got three quick questions, and then we are wrapping up tonight's show. One quick one, Lazy Python. Anyone for Nzonzi? Yes, I would take him. I know people will go, Steven Nzonzi, that gives you play for Blackburn. If you've seen since he's gone to La Liga, he's really developed as a player, and I think he's really impressive.
Did you not see the goal score against us in the Emirates Cup? Jeez.
Yeah. I really like him, and he's big physical presence. He's got that because he's got that height, he can get across the pitch well, and he just knows how to do his job. So I quite like him. He can do the box-to-box job. He can score a goal. It's not really his thing, but yeah, I'd quite happily take him. There was a rumour going around that we're in for him, but whether that's true or not, I've got no idea. One from K-Man, Arsenal forever. Are you in favour of VAR? That's the video assistant referee. Will it be introduced next season? Josh, are you in favour of VAR?
Yeah, I'm watching Bundesliga at the moment. They seem to get those decisions around pretty quickly at the moment. I think it's 30 seconds or so that they're turning around. With decisions. So see how it goes there. If it works well, then great, bring it in. It wouldn't have helped us today, though, to be honest, because it was offside. But
we would have got the penalty, though, wouldn't we?
That's true. We would have got the penalty. So we would have had that going for us.
Yeah. Not bad. But then again, it is against Jack Butland, so he probably would have fucking saved it with his little toe or something. Carl, are you in favour?
No, I'm not in favour, actually. I'm not. I think it takes away the talking points. You know, with all the decisions, if they're all perfect, there's been no reason to talk about football. I think it just becomes very boring and monotonous. So I'm not in favour of it. I think it takes away sort of the talking aspect about football. When decisions go wrong, it's what brings people together. It's the reason why, you know, we're all here talking about football, because we're sort of moaning about the bad decisions. If this decision was perfect, there'd be no reason to talk about it. So I'm not in favour of VAR.
Yeah, I was of the same opinion at first when it was talked about and they were trialling it out in different leagues and youth tournaments and stuff. Then I saw, I think, was it in the Confeds Cup? There were some horrendous decisions that went to the video referee and were still completely wrong. So I'm less fussed about it now. I'm still 50-50. I'm not too fussed if it comes in or if it doesn't. I'm like Carl, I like the being able to whinge about things and stuff. I just like having a moan. But even if we get it, you know, the person analysing it afterwards could still disagree with what you think after watching the replay over and over. If it's offside, then yeah, that's a different thing. But a foul is interpreted, still going to be interpreted by a human. So nothing's ever going to be perfect. So I think that aspect of it is not bad. But if it can stamp out things like, you know, someone's thrown an elbow on purpose and gets away with it in a game and doesn't get banned until game after and doesn't affect the match you're in, then obviously that's a good thing. Last question goes to 73259, who's asked some really good questions today. And of course, it had to be one about Alexis Sanchez, the missing man. Keeping Sanchez, who is fit for Chile and not for us, a good idea? Or are we just pissing in the wind, wasting cash for a player who's going? So there you go. Just simple question. Alexis, is he staying or going? Josh?
I want Alexis. I've wanted Alexis for a while.
Oh, we want him to go. What's your Twitter handle, Josh?
At B and Josh, and me and Chaz will start the United People's Front of Alexis. I just get the money for him from PSG. We should have done it before they bought Neymar, said some actual money, but I'm sure he can be an ambassador to the Qatari World Cup as well, and we can get 100 million for him.
Yeah, he could probably be a mascot for one of the stadiums that they've, you know, hundreds of people have died building. Allegedly, Qatar got lots of money, they can sue me. Carl, Alexis staying or going?
I think he's going to go. I think the reason why I think he's going to go is that Arsene Wenger has all been, you know, he's going to stay, I'm not getting rid of him. But then there's that little caveat. He said the only way he will go is if the board say that he's going. So that's his get out of jail free card, that if he leaves. For me, I want him to stay. I'm going to turn the trend. I genuinely want him to stay because I think with him, our team is massively improved. And who else is there in world football that we can get who will do the same job as Alexis? I don't think there's many. And there's rumours that Draxler apparently is...
Hello, your boyfriend.
I fucking love him. He's my man crush. I love Draxler with a passion. And if we could get sort of 40 million plus Draxler, I would snap your hand off for that. I genuinely would. I love Draxler completely. Whether it's just rumours and whether he's not going to go, we don't know. I think Chris is probably more suited to answer that question. But 40 million plus Draxler for Alexis, all day, I'll take that.
Fair enough. As for me on Alexis, I really don't know. I still think he's probably going to go. I don't have a problem if he goes, if it's abroad. We get good money, but most importantly, we reinvest the money. If someone pays us $100 million for him, just and we don't spend it, you know, what's the point? Just keep him for a year. Even if he's moody and he causes arguments, guarantee you put him on a football pitch, he'll still play really well. Even Alexis at 60% today, he probably could have won us the game. You know, that's, I'm sorry, he is the best player we've got at the club. So, yeah, we shall see. Not long to go before the window closes and we can all be put out of our misery on that one. But yeah, that's it for today's show. As I say, don't forget to go check out this week's podcast. And be sure to tune in again next week. We will be back for Liverpool, which is Sunday.
All right.
Sunday week, I think it is. Yeah. So, yeah, this week's, Danny's just put in the chat there. Excuse me, for anyone listening later. This week's ABW podcast is just Danny hosting. No Gimli this week. He can't do three in a row. Sometimes it gets complicated. No, he's actually busy. Don't worry. Gimli's not disappearing. But we have got the Raj, the Reverend's back, and Jeff. So a bit of get ahead, dog. Will be appearing. And, of course, FK, who's going to be on every single episode this season as well. So if you're not getting that joke, just go back and listen to this week's one. But yeah, thank you to everyone for tuning in today. Thank you for everyone who's been in the chat talking, retweeting and stuff. We all really appreciate it. Thank you, Carl, for joining me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thank you, Josh, as well, for coming on. Splendid moustache, I must say.
Thank you. There is a story behind it, but we won't go into that.
There you go. If you want to give Josh abuse about his views on Ozil and Sanchez and also question him on his moustache, you know where to go now. You've got his Twitter handle. That's all from us today. Not a good result, but, you know, we can all probably laugh at Spurs at some point because they've got to play at Wembley and they fucking hate it there. They're always shit. Anyway, we will be back again, as I say, Liverpool game. And don't forget to check out Monday's pod. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in. It's been ABW Radio, and we'll speak to you soon.